Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Laura Prendergast and I'm today joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So James, May is going to have to head back to Brussels to renegotiate the backstop. I mean, do you think there's anything she can get from them?
I don't think she's going to get anything from them straight away. I think that they are essentially waiting to see what happens in Parliament before they take a decision. If it looks like Parliament is going to step in and force the government to extend Article 50, the kind of so-called Cooper Amendment, if there's no deal reached, then I think that she's not going to get very much. But if there's a sense that if Cooper 2 fails on Valentine's Day, then I think you might get something, because there might be a sense of, are we really going to have this whole thing fall over this? You know, there might be more openness to UK ideas about time limits, exit mechanisms, all that kind of stuff. So I think the kind of question is, to get something, she needs to for no deal to remain an option for that. Because if no deal appears to be disappearing as an option, then I think the EU will just say, well, look, we'll sit tight. But if there is a chance of there being of this all ending up in a no deal scenario, then I think to avoid the kind of short term disruption that that would cause, and to avoid the risk of the UK going off and becoming a completely different kind of economy after Brexit, then I think they would be prepared. They're not going to junk the entire backstop, but they might be prepared to tweak it, to change it in a way that might make it acceptable enough to get it through the Commons.
So, Katie, what are we expecting to see happen over the next few days?
Well, I think Theresa May is going to try and look very busy as per usual, and as though negotiations are happening, even if the EU say that they're not in the mood for a renegotiation on the withdrawal agreement. But we are in a slightly strange situation where I think the EU wants to see ideas from Theresa May as to what she thinks will actually could be added to the backstop to create a change that would get a majority. But I think, as James touches on, we're slightly stuck in a Groundhog Day, because we now know there's going to be another series of votes on amendments on Valentine's Day after Theresa May puts down a motion on the 13th of February. And it now seems that you don't like what happened the first time around that happened, because no deal wasn't taken off the table and MPs showed that they didn't like the backstop. So they want to just make sure that is the case the second time. And I think there's an expectation in government that only if that happens will you start to see significant changes. So again, very slow. I think the big question is, if Theresa May doesn't get much, and maybe she'll get a very small thing for the 13th from the EU, can she do enough to placate the Remain forces in her cabinet, in her government, that she is on the road to something in order to stop them actually trying to take the no deal off the table the next time around? Because a lot of the reason some MPs didn't vote for the Yvette Cooper amendment from the Tory side was that Theresa May told them they'd have another chance to do that, and that chance is in 2 weeks' time. So can she get them to not do that?
The challenge for her essentially is to persuade people in private that she would never go down the no deal option route, so that the MPs don't feel the need to vote against her and for the Cooper Amendment, while in the Commons successfully saying to people, like, don't bind my hands going into these negotiations. If you let me do this, I can get a better deal than the deal we've currently got.
I mean, how likely is it that we're going to be delaying the leaving date, do you think?
Oh, I think delaying the leaving date is almost certain. It just depends what kind of delay. And politically, there's a massive difference between a technical extension, because there's a deal done before March 29th, and there needs to be some time to get it put into UK domestic law. I mean, some people would object to that, but I think it would be very hard to argue that seriously, if you've actually done a deal and Parliament has voted for it, you should crash out, because you don't want to take the time to put the stuff into law. There's a massive difference between that, though, and just asking for an extension because you're stuck. If you ask for an extension because you're stuck, I mean, that becomes much more difficult. And I think it also becomes more difficult because the last thing the EU want is the UK coming back every 3 months saying, can we ask for another extension? So I think the EU's offer of an initial extension would be quite a long one. You know, it would be, I say in the magazine this week, it would be the French are pushing for longer than a year, quite substantially longer than a year.
And we've begun to see some signs that, although it was once, you know, we have to leave at the end of March, there is sounds from certain Brexiteers, Graham Brady, you know, in charge of the 1922 committee, that actually, so long as it was purely a technical extension to bring in effect a Brexit deal, that might be palatable on some level. Not particularly palatable, but it's something they could live with. And you've also seen Jeremy Hunt float the idea of an extension this week. So I think there is beginning to be a bit of an acceptance, be it reluctant, within the Tory party that there might be a slight delay. But as long as it's a delay for a reason, that's fine.
And Katie, what do you make about this story with Labour MPs being offered constituents money in exchange for them supporting May's Brexit deal?
So this has created a bit of a row in the Labour Party. Maybe that's something Number 10 was trying to do, to create disunity. And it's one of the tactics. Theresa May knows full well, I think, that she's not going to be able to get every Conservative Brexiteer to go for her deal. She might have managed to get all but one to go in and vote for this Graham Brady amendment on Tuesday. But that what they all want is probably going to fall, be quite far away from what she actually gets on the backstop. It won't be as far as they want it to go. So there's probably about 20 to 25 Brexiteers perhaps who aren't going to move. So she needs to get Labour votes as well. And one of the ways they're looking to do this is to tempt Labour MPs by saying, we can give you more money for your constituencies, particularly in Leave areas, if you are going to get behind this deal. I think it's called pork barrelling. James nodding.
why is it called that?
It's a US political phrase. I think it's basically the idea that you lick the salt off the pork barrel that basically makes it acceptable. You're stretching my knowledge of the phrase.
I'm glad you stepped in there. I merely had the term. But we've already seen a division in the Labour Party because Frank Field, who, to be fair, has renounced the Labour whip over anti-Semitism, has said that, well, this is normally how politics works. You know, it's often been the case that the whips will get to try and bend the will of MPs who are being difficult by saying, we can help you with this road bump here, we can do this there, and that does relate to money. And actually, MPs should jump at the chance. But you've seen other MPs, such as Anna Turley, say, this is disgraceful, this shouldn't be about money, this is about more than money, this is about, you know, the future of the country. So I think it's a tricky one. I do think that there are some Labour MPs who are looking for a reason to back this deal because they look after Leave constituencies. But I do wonder if, for some of them, the idea that they're taking money from the Tories to vote for it actually makes it seem a bit more grubby, even if it is a normal Westminster politics way of going about things. Just the way it can be cast by those who don't want you to do, I think, might actually complicate it a bit.
I think it all depends what the money is. I mean, first of all, it's important to note this is money for their constituencies, not for them. And I think if this is a...
could be for their constituency office.
If this is a serious, substantial amount of money designed to regenerate those bits of a country that haven't done so well economically in the last 20 to 30 years, then I think it does make it more defensible. I also think this, which is some of these Labour MPs who are attacking them, you know, their constituents will see it, well, who, in places that voted for Brexit, the idea that you're going to get a Brexit deal through and get money for the constituency isn't going to be the most unpopular position imaginable. I also think that there's another thing going on here, which is, you know, the fascinating question is, what is the Labour whip's attitude to people who do this? There's already a bit of a backlash in Labour because those people who abstained or voted against the Cooper Amendment, which Labour whipped in favour of, the sense is that they haven't been kind of carpeted by the whips. They haven't been subjected to the full panoply of things that whips can do to people who don't vote the right way. And there is an intriguing question as to whether there is a little bit of blind eye turning going on here, which is, you know, Jeremy Corbyn is never going to say vote for Theresa May's Brexit deal or formally order Labour MPs to abstain, but those MPs who do abstain or won't suddenly face his full wrath.
Thanks for listening, and if you like this podcast, please do let us know on the iTunes store. We always like hearing from you.